Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show is underway, brought to you by Refreshment Services Pepsi and Harvest Ridge Coffee. And it is election season, primary election coming up in Quincy. A lot of Republicans vying against each other to see who will prevail in the general election. Mike Rhine is my guest today. He is the incumbent 5th Ward Republican alderman. He does have a challenge from Laura McReynolds in the Republican primary. Welcome to the Mary Griffith Show.
Good morning, Mary. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. Yes. Mike, why should people vote to retain you? I know it's a short group that actually can vote for you in the 5th Ward, but you've been an alderman for a long time.
Yes,
why? Why should the 5th Ward vote to retain you?
Well, first and foremost is the institutional knowledge that I have garnered over the tenure of my experience. And that's very important to bring to the table, to bring to the voters the historic perspective. Not that it can't change, but that everything changes every year. It's gradual. But we make commitments in the past, and we need to honor those commitments until we learn to understand the facts behind them. And there's a shortage of institutional knowledge because of the rapid turnover. And a good example is the city of Quincy being 170 years old or whatever the heck it is now, 180. I don't know. It's pretty old. But we don't run like a 180-year-old business because every time we get a new mayor, it starts all over, like resets. That's what you lose if you don't have that institutional knowledge, and that's real important. And we've done some really good things in the 5th Ward. My first and second primary focus is on the 5th Ward, to take care of that ward to make it function very well. And my focus, not mine, but all aldermen's focus, and I'm not here to preach to them, but we have five core functions in the state of Illinois, or in Quincy, that the city has to do. Nobody else can do, and that's police, fire, water, sewer, and streets. And we really shouldn't really go beyond those five core functions, and I can tell you that we don't have enough money to do those five today. And that's what really limits us, is the lack of dollars. Now, if you want to keep raising taxes, we certainly can do that, but that's the downfall. And so we got to show some restraint. But those five core functions are biggies, and those are what I bring to the table in the 5th Ward. Zoning, property rights, those issues are paramount to the individuals in the 5th Ward when they try to get along with their neighbors. You know, the old Hatfields and McCoys are just fighting across the, and fences really do make good neighbors, but people fight about the fences that people put up because they don't stay within zoning codes. And so I'm there to facilitate city regulations and residents' concerns. And I'm in the middle, and I'm not the referee. I'm just a facilitator to make sure that each side gets heard and we do the right thing.
The 5th Ward alderman, every alderman has to, of course, put the needs of the 5th Ward first, or their ward first, but you also have to look at the whole expanse of the city. And you mentioned institutional knowledge. But I'll play devil's advocate. Some people say, yeah, but some people have been on there for so long, it's time for some fresh blood.
Well, I'm not sure what fresh blood means. I gain new perspective every day on the job. And so to me, that's fresh blood. And I do factor into that learning all my prior experiences. And yeah, you can say fresh blood, but it's not trained. And the learning curve is not a week or two. Learning curve exceeds 2 years, I can tell you that. I've talked to many new aldermen, and I've worked with them, and they'll tell me that it takes a minimum of 2 years, and they're still learning after the first term. And so the notion of term limits, although it sounds romantic, it's really kind of ridiculous. There are term limits today. I learned this from Randy Fries. I get elected, it's for 4 years, and then I'm done. Unless the voters want me to go back. And it's their decision. It's not mine. It's theirs. And so Randy Fries told me that 30 years ago, I think it was. And he's a very wise man. And it's very true. I don't take this election lightly. I'm not entitled to this. I have to earn it. I have to prove myself, not just during the election, but for the past 4 years. And I'm responsive. People call me, I call them back. They email me, I respond. I take care of their issues. Sometimes I take care of their issues and I don't tell them because I know that if it's taken care of, it's obvious to them. And they will know that somebody did something.
What would you say are the top three things? I'll just pick an arbitrary number like three. And just in the past 4 years, what are the top three things you've done for the Fifth Ward?
For the Fifth Ward, well, I make sure that things get done in the Fifth Ward like they're supposed to, which is streets get repaired. They get identified, they get on the list, and they get done. Ward aldermen take care of their ward by very personal knowledge. The city employees don't go into the wards. They take care of the entire city. And so, yeah, it's the streets. I have worked to keep the finances under control.
You are chairman of the finance committee, are you not?
I am. Yes, I am. And I take that very serious. And the finance committee, I don't do it alone as a dictator, and the committee can't get it done. It still takes the whole council. But I've brought forth the knowledge and understanding of the city's finances. And I work closely with Sherry Ray. She's a very smart woman, and she does a great job at the city. And we're darn lucky to have her, actually. And so she and I work very closely together. But I think from my constituents, controlling expenses, keeping a handle on the taxes is very important, and the understanding of that. And the next thing is just the purchasing at the city's level. We all need to have snow plows and salt and chemicals in the water plant and chemicals in the water treatment plant. And all of that stuff is real important to manage as well. And I don't manage that personally, but I'm involved in it. Having spent a lot of years on the council, I'm well aware of the chemicals, sodium permanganate and all the words that we can't even pronounce, that the city purchases to, you know, to take that Mississippi River and drink it takes a little bit of chemicals.
just a few to clean up. Mike Ryan, my guest today, he is running for 5th Ward Alderman. He is the incumbent. He faces a challenge in the primary from Laura McReynolds. We're very happy to have you on today. Thank you so very much for coming by. I'll see you less than 12 hours from now at the city council meeting.
Oh, yes, that is tonight. Well, service to humanity is the best work of life, and I've spent my life in service to humanity, and I want to continue that, so I ask the Fifth Ward voters for their vote.
Okay, I can't vote for him, but if I could, I would say he's the best raccoon collector from not in the Fifth Ward. Comes down and works in the First and Seventh Wards every once in a while collecting raccoons,
picking up dead animals
when he sees them.
Well, you see, Mondays are the best day to pick them up because nobody's picked them up Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night. So we got 3 days worth of dead animals laying around.
Okay, so Pam Ryan, Raccoon Sue on the agenda tonight. Mike, always great to see
you. Thank you, Mary. Have a great day.
Thank you so very much. We're going to be back in just a moment and talk about veterans. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. I'll answer your question in just a moment. Paul Havermail is here with the Veterans Assistance Commission, or VAC. You'll hear that acronym every now and again. And Richard Elson-Peter is also here with together with Tri-State Veteran Support. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning, Mary.
Griffith
Show. Good morning, Mary.
So glad to have you both here. As always, Mr. Elson-Peter will kind of sit in the back. And he'll make his commentary known if it needs to be made known. But today we're going to talk mostly with Paul Havermail. He's the superintendent for the Veterans Assistance Commission of Adams County. This is newly created. So we're going to talk today. We have talked in the past about it, but we're going to talk today about how it works and what it does. And it's kind of just really in its infancy, but it is supported by our tax dollars. And so, welcome, Paul Havermail.
Well, thank you for having us on again, Mary. We're very happy to be here.
So what is the Veterans Assistance Commission of Adams County?
It's an organization that is established by state statute, but it is a county-level organization. It's kind of I call it a pseudo-government agency. We are funded by tax dollars, as you say, at the county level, but we're governed by a board of veterans that are selected from the veteran service organizations that meet the criteria. So your VFWs, your American Legions, Reserve Officer Association, Marine Corps League, and things like that. that are eligible, petition the county to do this if there's a need. Then the county, it's incumbent upon the county then to fund it and support it. We are paid by the county, but I don't, necessarily work for the county. So it's a great the way it's organized, because it lets veterans control how veterans are helped, but it also provides us a steady funding source so we can do our job.
So we went to the polls and we said we wanted this back, and we wanted to impose, I think it's a sales tax.
It's actually a small portion of property tax.
Property tax,
right.
Okay. It's a very, very tiny property tax, mm-hmm. but altogether over Adams County, it adds up. It's enough to have the Veterans Commission. And so you're trying to serve veterans. Now, one thing that's frustrating me as we do this month after month after month, it seems to me that no matter how much we try to help veterans, there's still a large population of veterans who are unaware of what is available or unwilling to take advantage of what is available because they don't like whatever about it.
Well, and that's one of the things that we were sensitive to when we first got in this. And again, I think it's because we are guided by a board of veterans. And I, in my position, I have to be an honorably discharged veteran as well. It does give us the ability to speak veteran to a veteran and make them feel a little bit more comfortable. We've seen since our inception, we've done a pretty good job, I think, of getting the word out. I have a list here, but I don't want to read it. I counted it the other day, and it's 50 organizations that we've spoken to in person. So that could be assistance organizations, service organizations, things like that. To get the word out, and it's gone really well. We've seen, when I did my report to the governor's office and the Illinois Department of Human Services and the county, we had seen about 363 veterans in that first year, which was less than a year. Now that we're right at a year, that's right at 400. So we are getting the word out. People are coming to see us. It's worked really well. And we've got a bunch of statistics. If you ever want those, I can certainly spout that off.
Oh,
but
I'm so excited about statistics. I
can tell that
Would
in your
you
face.
Just read them off to me right now and I'll fall asleep. Statistics are interesting and they show things. Like, you've talked to 400 people. But the true thing is, what have you done? Because anybody can keep a ledger, as you well
exactly.
know, but it's the lives you're impacting.
And quite frankly, the only statistic that really matters, we have to do this for reporting purposes, and there are some pretty staggering statistics of our performance if we want to do that, but the only performance that really matters is, have we made a difference in a veteran's life, a positive impact on for the investment that the county and our residents have done. And any measure that you can come up with, we have. I know for a fact we've directly saved lives with intervening in some suicidal or veterans at risk. We've had an impact on getting benefits for people that really had no other income and they were eligible for benefits, and we worked through it and got them benefits. So, again, numbers are numbers and they're boring and they don't matter a whole lot, but I know for a fact that this has had a positive impact, and I will challenge anybody that wants to challenge me on that to come on out and let's talk about it.
Well, I don't think you're going to get too many challenges, because it's like the old adage about the starfish. You walk along the beach and you see a stranded starfish and you throw it back in the ocean. And somebody said, well, what difference does that make? But it makes a difference to that starfish.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can't save them all. You can't provide services to everybody, because one of the things we're dealing with, and we just have to be honest with it and say it right up, is mental illness. Now, there's several people that inhabit the downtown Quincy area, and they become characters, and we don't make fun of them here, but we notice them every day, and we talk with our coworkers about, did you see so-and-so, did you see
Correct.
So-and-so? And some of them may be in the military, some of them may not. One gentleman at least thinks he's in the military, because he marches every day, and he salutes, and yeah. he shows that he's shooting a gun, and he does things like that, and my heart goes out to this man, because I want to help him, but I'm sure because of the advanced state of his mental illness and his complete delusion, he's unable to be helped by a lot of the existing parameters that we have. In other words, he probably does not want to be hospitalized. He probably does not want to go to a shelter. Hmm. He probably cannot conform, let's say, to some kind of government program where you're given housing and you have to respond in a certain way with behavior. So let's just get down right to the rubber to the road. You've made a lot of difference, and I know in your personal life you care about this very much. What is it going to take? Is there anything we can do to help the veterans who are suffering from mental illness in this community?
There are a number of resources. It starts with, your veteran service organizations. You know, they're a big component of this. So, again, your Legions, VFWs, and all of those. Organizations like Together with Tri-State Veteran Support. I mean, all those things that come together are gateways into getting help, and they're more palatable many times to folks that are in crisis or challenged. You know, one thing I do want to back up a little bit. Not every veteran we see is in crisis, and it's a really relatively small percentage. A lot of what we do is just helping people get their benefits and things like that. So, I mean, there's a lot of an advocacy for veteran issues.
Yeah, it's not like you're some crisis hotline.
No, we are not. Absolutely are not.
You know, it's not a crisis if you haven't got your benefits, but it's annoying as all hell. And
right.
You're helping people work through these projects.
Absolutely.
So they can get, yes, I can be seen by the VA. Yes, I can get my benefits. Yes, I can get this.
Right,
yes,
correct.
I can get whatever. Yeah.
Correct. But to your question, one of the big barriers, I think, a lot of times for veterans, and especially we've experienced now, is that, I talk about it all the time, is that they get uncomfortable with bureaucracy. That's one of the big things. And then they also get very uncomfortable with when they don't have any way to connect with the person that's trying to help them on some shared experience. And I think that's where the VACs are vital, because everybody that's in our office is either a veteran or directly associated with a veteran. So they're either a veteran, they're a spouse of a veteran, or something like that. That gives us a little bit of common, I guess, terminology that where we can break the ice sometimes. We can talk about how, you know, horrible basic training was to get some commonality with each other. And, you know, the green eggs that you get out of the green containers in the field, you know, were they great or not? But those kind of things can break the ice. And we, you know, we talk Army. We talk military sometimes. And we can say things that we maybe... you don't hear from somebody else in an assistance organization put it quite that way. You got to kind of play read the room a little bit when you're talking to somebody. Do you want to, you know, use a little bit more coarse language or not? You know, so those kind of things. And I think it creates the empathy, and it gets that relationship going to where we can then say, okay, well, have you thought about going here to get some assistance? And 'cause we do a lot of that. We act as a hub. Again, dealing with all of those organizations we did early on, we have a really good feel about what's available in the area and what the qualifications are. We work very closely with just about any assistance organization that you can name, you know, General Assistance, the Croc Center, United Way. I mean, I don't want to name all of them, but just breaking that stigma of, well, you're going there, and it means you've either failed or you feel some kind of way about it. If we can get the veteran that we see past that, then they can get help and get better.
It's a perception thing. I mean, it always is. You know, I was joking one time. I said to my husband, I said, we need some marital counseling. He goes, well, I'm not going to a woman. She'll agree with you. Okay. Well, but it is amazing because... yes, I'm not a therapist, but if I went to school for 6 or 8 years, you know, I think I could probably handle a lot of things, because when it gets down to brass tacks, you know, here is the diagnosis and here's, you know, but the perception is the reality.
Right.
No veteran wants to tell me, you know, Susie Cupcake, who can't, you know, can't even make a good bed corner, you know, would never make the Marines. They don't expect someone like me to be able to empathize with them. And that's what it boils down to. So that leads me to a follow-up question, which we have to take a break, but you cannot control this as the VAC, as the Veterans Assistance Commission, but we need more mental health specialists that have veteran experience. And we'll talk about that when we come back. But right now, we're going to head up to the URSA Farmers Cooperative, see what's happening up there with our farm markets. Rex Battery brings you this report. We're back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD. My guests today are Richard Elson-Peter, who's always here, sitting quietly in the background. We'll probably have a few words from him before the day is over. And we're also talking with the director of the Veterans Assistance Commission of Adams County, Paul Havermail. This is a very, very small property tax percentage, extremely small. You won't even really notice it on your property tax that goes to the Veterans Assistance Commission. Our county voted to have this. Some counties do not, but they provide assistance for veterans that basically help them just navigate the bureaucracy, which can be a living hell. We've been talking a lot, and we do talk a lot about mental health issues among people who have served in the military. So my question before we went to break was, what are we going to do, or how can we increase the number of mental health professionals, therapists, paraprofessionals, people who work in the mental health and behavioral health industry allied to have more veterans so that they can have these camaraderie experiences? What can we do?
One of the things we've noticed over the, you know, the massive amount of time we've been in operation of 12 months, that the mental health providers are really starting to make an effort to have more veteran-specific trainings, more veteran-specific staff, and that also includes having, I guess recruiting veterans that are qualified to be counselors. So they've got that, both sides of it. One thing, for an instance, there's an initiative throughout the host state, and there's a lot of local ties to it called the Governor's Challenge, which trains people, direct care providers, family, it could be folks like us, it could be like Together Tri-State Veterans groups, things like that. It trains them in veteran culture, but it also gives them some warning signs and some trainings on PTSD, military sexual trauma, all of those things. And in fact, there's one Wednesday that I'm presenting at about how the benefit side of that. So I think the realization that there is some veteran specific sides to mental health and all those things that come under mental health in the industry, if you want to call it that. You know, Chuck Johnson with the Blessing Health Systems has been instrumental, along with Richard and folks like that, of raising the awareness about veteran mental health issues in our area and even throughout the region and the state. So, I mean, it's a mission that I think all people that provide service to veterans needs to make a priority. And we're seeing VACS specifically do that, and the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs and their VSOs are starting to do that as well. So it's out there. Again, not everybody that we see or every veteran has a mental health issue or something like that, but enough of them do that it's definitely something we have to be aware of.
Well, veterans are no different than any other members of the population, and that at any given point in our lives, all of us will probably have some kind of very brief mental health behavioral issue. It is no different than having a cold or maybe breaking a bone. Most of us in our lives will have something like that happen. Now, how critical it becomes and how long-term it is one thing. You know, I've suffered from a diagnosed mental illness for, you know, probably most of my adult life, but I was diagnosed in my early 30s. I still take medication for that same event today. What would my life be like without that ongoing care and without that medication? I can't imagine. I don't think I'd be doing this, for one thing. I couldn't. But it's interesting because we're trying to fight the stigma still of mental health. And I think sometimes what happens is we concentrate on a few people in our community that we see, the characters we see out standing on the street corner or doing whatever. They're not bothering anybody. They're cheerful usually. They're happy. You know, whatever's going on in their world, you know, they're adding to society whatever way they can. But there are some deeply troubled people too who are hiding behind that mask. and those people need to be identified. You know, it's so interesting. I know CPR and cardio resuscitation because I learned that because I thought it was important for me to know that and how to use an AED. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't make me a doctor. It doesn't make me have a health career, but it makes me the first person who might be there until somebody else can get there. I think as time goes forward, are we, the governor's challenge and other things, are we working towards a way in which we can start training through a service club or through a younger group of people, some kind of these first responders, so that when we see something, we say something?
Well, and that's the thing. You hit the nail on the head as far as, you know, mental health, substance abuse. And obviously, as you indicated before, I've had some personal knowledge of that. You don't know what word will make that person seek help or make it through the day or not go through with their plans for harming themselves. So by having things like the Governor's Challenge and Together with Tri-State Veterans and Together Tri-State Veterans Support and some of the things Richard and those groups have done, and raising the awareness is key, but also having something that you can give back to that person when you do recognize that there's a problem. You hit the nail on the head again with the analogy to, you know, CPR or something like that. If we see somebody having a heart attack or we think they're having a heart attack, there's enough people around that CPR will probably be administered to them. If somebody's having a mental health crisis, that's not necessarily the case. I think we're getting there. I think people are starting to destigmatize it quite a bit, and I credit groups like us, frankly, and the mental health providers. I know CHADOC is making a big initiative on mental health first aid as well. So, I mean, it's out there. They know it needs to be done, and I think, thank God that it's starting to be something that is not, you know, we just need to ignore our crazy people. Well, that's not the way it works, folks. It is life-saving. And I will tell you, again, from personal experience and experience in the job that I do every day, one kind word, one kind action, one getting the person to the right person to talk to is life-saving. I know for a fact, without any doubt, without any qualification, that we have saved a person's life directly from our office.
And you know what? Yay.
Yeah.
I mean, if your annual report said, I saved one life.
That's a success.
Absolutely. But we have some other things to look forward to. For example, I want to know about what you want to happen. You've got 1 year under your belt. I want to see what you want to do this year, how the community in general can help. I think that mental health first aid is a great idea. What are the challenges? And you know, then we'll talk about what still needs to be done and what we're lacking. So what's going to happen in year two?
Well, as I said before, we've seen our census is pretty high. We knew there was a need, and that was the motivation for starting a VAC and asking for a VAC. And again, Adams County was great support. They have supported us all the way. We do have a high concentration of veterans in Adams County. About 8.3% of our population is a veteran of some sort. What we like to do in this next year is we are adding staff so we can cut down on any wait times, because waiting in some of these cases is not a good thing. And we've got that funded as well. We are looking to continue the outreach and the advocacy, and we're probably going to make a bigger we are going to make a bigger effort and a more directed effort to continue the outreach with the groups that funnel people towards us. So we work very closely with the VA clinic. We work very closely with all those assistance organizations we talked about. And we want to just it's becoming very seamless. Hey, Paul, I've got, you know, or Emily or Penny, we've got somebody here that needs to talk to the VAC. They're a veteran. We think you can help. Send them out. We've even started giving some of those groups our intake forms so they can do the intake information, because we share information, and we have mutual agreements to where we, you know, security and confidentiality and all that. But they can do some of the work for us, and then we can streamline it. So it's all of those things. We just want to continue to grow. We want veterans to be comfortable coming to us. One of the things that we're trying to do, again, is getting staffed properly to where we can cut down on the delays. And as you said before, we're not going to be everything to everybody. We're not going to be everything to every veteran. We're going to do the best we can. We've done well. Have we made mistakes? Sure. Have we, you know, missed it once in a while? Yes, but not very often. And but the big thing we want to do is just make sure we're making a positive impact on the veteran community in our county, and doing the job that I believe the delegate board wants us to do. And I think we are to this point. Now, Richard may be able to answer that a little bit better than me.
Yeah, okay, let's get Richard in on this. Because, no, the truth of the matter is, yes, I mean, I'm not going to argue with anything you have said, Paul. Paul Havermill, you have done a great job. The whole group has done a great job in your first year. I mean, there's no argument there. Like you said, if you saved one life, you can just put an end on the annual report right there. I mean, yes, you helped 400 people, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you saved one life. That's fantastic. Richard Elson Peter, I'm sure you're thrilled that we now have a VAC. I know you've been working on this for a long time. You've wanted this for a long time. We've got it now. But what still, even with this, what do we need in 25, 26, 2027? What do we still don't have that we need here?
I'm going to back up just a little bit.
Okay.
One of the parameters, one of the things that I look at as far as our success, Paul Fassett has a whole list of stats that he can bring up about how we helped, what we helped, who we helped, the number we helped, the financial impact on the community and all this. But one of the things that I looked at is we are, you know, how, if we are a success, I think because of that collaboration with other organizations. So if I, Paul tells me that we, Paul gets phone calls from the Sheriff's Department if their veteran has been incarcerated and says, we have somebody here. Can you come talk to them? We have Blessing Health Systems will call us and say, Paul, we have somebody that's in our mental health facility that's a veteran. Can you come talk to them? We have the VA clinic that calls Paul and say, Paul, we have a veteran out here with these issues. What can you do for them? So I look at that as a board member, as somebody that helps put this together. That's what I look at as a success, is people are trusting us. People are coming to us. People are using us as a resource for their veterans that are coming into them. That's what I look at as one of the key points that I look at as a success, and what a great job Paul and his staff are doing. So,
just knowing that, I mean, in other words, somebody at Blessing Hospital that may not be a veteran may never have heard of this. Now they know. If somebody comes in with this set of problems, we have a number to call, and those people will come and assist us in taking care of this person. Because, again, it's not just their physical health that we're looking at. It's their mental health. And for some of them, it is their physical health, and they're really struggling to try to get the benefits that they deserve.
Well, and what we're looking at is, we do not want to be a crisis center.
Right.
We want to work upstream of that. We want to take care of a veteran before they get to a crisis point. So if they have trouble with food insecurities or housing insecurities or job insecurities or health issues or whatever this, let's take care of them before they get to a point that they're in crisis. Let's work upstream and take care of them. So if this organization can call and say, we have this veteran that needs help, we, or this organization calls, we can work upstream and help them before they get to that crisis point.
That right there says it all. Because once you're in crisis, so much then is hard to do. We've had, and tonight they're going to probably discuss it at the Quincy City Council, and this is an issue that affects many, many people. And really, issues that affect veterans also affect all of us. If veterans can't find a place to live, nobody can find a place to live. If veterans don't have good physical and mental health care, then nobody has it. So one of the things that's really struggling, the Quincy City is struggling with, this whole area, Adams County, is struggling with, is housing and some really, really bad housing conditions in some of these rental properties. Have you seen that, Paul Havermill? And is there anything the VAC can do to assist in that?
Well, there are a number of, which was surprising to me, frankly, there are a number of homeless people in our county, and there's a good percentage of them, a little bit higher than what the percentage of the population is, that are veterans, believe it or not. So what the VAC, what we do, we work very closely again with, you know, the YWCA and the SSVF program at the Kroc Center. They have a homeless initiative, so we don't duplicate services. We try to, you know, let people do what they're good at. But where we come in the equation is that we will help with temporary housing. We'll get the veteran to those places, and then we can help get them into their hopefully semi-permanent housing. What we're finding is, you know, there's, and I don't want to slam anybody at all, but and I know intimately the conversations that the city's having. I get it. But what we're finding is that having those mid-priced or lower-priced housing units that are in really good shape are kind of few and far between. And I think that's what the city's dealing with as well, and really the whole county. Now, I will say the county has done some housing investment on the county level that I think is going to help in that area quite a bit. Will we ever have enough housing units at the right level to completely eradicate homelessness? Probably not. But that's sure a goal that I think we can all share. The big thing that the VAC can do is, again, be an advocate for that. And then there's also homeless initiatives at the state and county, or I'm sorry, the state and federal level on the veteran side that we can try to plug people into. They're very, you know, there is a bureaucracy there, but we can help with that bureaucracy. But a direct impact that we have is we help veterans on a one-on-one basis get into housing and then make sure that they're set up for success by leveraging not only our assistance, but the assistance of those other programs that we talked about. And it's happened a number of times over the year. Not as many as I would like and not as quickly as I would like sometimes, but we're certainly aware of it, and it is an issue, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah. We all believe it. Housing is a critical issue in this area, finding jobs for veterans. I think one thing we all would like to say is that we all stand up on, you know, Veterans Day and on the 4th of July, and we salute the flags, and we say we treat our veterans so great. And I think, by and large, we do. But got to put our money where our mouth is too, and I know a lot of people are out at the Illinois Veterans Home looking at what's going on out there, and the millions and millions of dollars that are being spent, and some people would say, my God, the per person cost out here is just outrageous. And then you say, but what was the per person cost for those like my father who served in World War II? So we have to always keep that in our minds. If we say we want to support our veterans, then we have to do that, and it's an ongoing relationship. Well, thank you very much, Paul Habermehl, for taking time today. Congratulations on your post. Look forward to working with you. Richard Elson Peter, always great to have you on board. I'll see you next month.
I look forward to it, Mary.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening today.